I've been a Presbyterian minister and should admit that there was a time in my life when I embraced the idea of putting murderers to death. Like so many Texans, I was raised in an atmosphere that insisted the only real justice was that which claimed an eye for an eye. I was wrong. As I participated in the endless process that would earn my state infamous recognition for its death penalty stance, I found myself wondering just what we were accomplishing. That is what this book is about. It's not so much a story about me as it is a remembrance of a dark and troubling corner of the world I once occupied, a journey that I'd never planned to take. It's a story that examines that frightening twilight time between life and death, issues spiritual and moral, and the most basic concepts of right and wrong. It is my honest as possible observations of what prison life is all about, a portrait, as well as I can draw it, of an ever-growing segment of our nation's society that all too many wish to forget. And it's about the death penalty issue, which screams to us almost daily from headlines and the 6 o'clock news. On the following pages, I will introduce you to men who faced that penalty, those charged with carrying it out, and loved ones affected by the process. And I will share the questions that have never been far from my mind since that December day in 1982 when I accompanied a condemned murderer named Charlie Brooks into the death chamber, where he became the first prisoner in the world ever to die by lethal injection. Does the death penalty serve as a deterrent to crime? When I started as a prison chaplain 2 decades ago, there were 100 men on Texas's death row. Since that time, the state has executed over 250. Yet the number of those sentenced to die has climbed to almost 500. I submit that there is absolutely no proof that execution in any way deters murder. And there is the matter of closure, which we hear so much about. In those dark early mornings following an execution, I spoke with the loved ones of crime victims, husbands and wives, mothers, fathers, and children, and almost without exception found that the feeling of relief so long anticipated was not realized. A death, however horrible and senseless, cannot be erased by another death, however quick and humane. And as a young woman once said to me following the execution of the man who murdered her mother, it really doesn't change anything, does it? It doesn't bring her back. Her grandchildren still won't ever be able to see her. All the death penalty does, I strongly believe, is create another set of victims. By killing a person, we inflict great damage on yet another family. While I do not wish to be viewed as some naive apologist for the evils of those deserving punishment, I know that they, too, have loved ones who grieve just as desperately as do the families of their victims. I've watched them make tearful visits to the death house, knowing it would be the last time they would see their husband, father, brother, or son alive. I've seen prison guards turn in their badges, wardens walk away from their jobs, and fellow chaplains sink to such depressed states that they were forced to turn away from their calling. They, too, have been victims of a legal system that insists not only on the right, but the duty to take the life of another human being. And so, yes, I am among those growing voices who believe it is time that lawmakers and peacekeepers, members of the greatest society in the world, come to the civilized realization that the cruel act of revenge, however cloaked in legal terms, nets us nothing and diminishes us all. On the pages that follow, however, I promise no sermon, no indignant rant that insists I have found all the answers and should, above all others, be heard. I will simply ask that you travel along with me, hearing the voices, seeing the faces. Over the years, I ministered to men so far removed from the social mainstream, so callous and mean-spirited,